Brendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
Yeah, welcome to Going In Raw Countout. We're on the road to WrestleMania, Larson.
Yes, it's WrestleMania weekend.
That's right, it is. And in honor of WrestleMania, where hopefully there will be some really good matches.
Yes.
We're going to talk about our favorite matches.
Yes, these aren't necessarily the best WrestleMania matches, although we think they're pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But these are just the ones that we have fond memories of, that have stuck in our heads. They're our favorites.
Mm-hmm. And as a reminder, we're here at youtube.com/StephenLarson. Be sure to hit that subscribe button because YouTube likes to unsubscribe people randomly.
Sometimes, yes.
We're also available wherever fine podcasts are, including iTunes, where, again, if you hit the download or subscribe button, it helps boost the profile of the show, gets us up in the rankings.
Correct.
Yeah.
We're also at patreon.com/StephenLarson.
Mm-hmm.
Various reward tiers. You get stuff in return.
And you help support the show.
Exactly.
And finally, we're at prowrestlingtees.com/Going In Raw, where this weekend there's a huge 15% store-wide discount.
Site-wide.
Site-wide.
Including the Going In Raw store, 5 designs right now, hopefully 6 by the time this video goes up.
I know, we got the In Your Haas shirt
yes.
going up.
Use the promo code MANIA.
MANIA.
You have till Monday at 12 p.m. Central Time.
That's right.
Take advantage of that deal.
Now, let's get into our 10 favorite. These are our personal favorites. So
yes.
Just really... Like, you can comment all you want. Let us know in the comments what your favorite matches are.
Yeah.
But you can't disagree with our favorites.
We're all right.
We're all right.
We're right. You're right.
Exactly. Nobody's wrong here. Number 10.
10.
HBK versus Razor Ramon WrestleMania X.
Or 10. 10. Ladder match.
Yeah, ladder match. So we just watched this.
Again
today.
We make it seem like we've never seen it before.
I know. A lot of these we had to go back and rewatch because we're old and our memories are crap.
Yes.
But this was actually better than I even remembered it.
I know.
It is a very physical match.
It is. And you know, we get so spoiled these days with ladder matches that have all sorts of ridiculous high spots.
Yeah.
And they did some ladder spots, plenty of them, and I'm sure mm-hmm. they were incredible for the day.
Mm-hmm.
But even considering that, the match is really well-paced.
Yeah.
They tell a good story.
Yeah.
Both guys sell their asses off.
Here's the thing, I think. So, like, when...
The match, there's no point, even though, we've seen arguably far more exciting ladder matches since this.
Yeah.
At no point was this match not fun.
Okay,
it's
well,
a
here.
Fun match to watch.
Okay, let me talk.
No.
When the Dudleys, the Hardys, and Edge and Christian came around... They kind of made the ladder match look like the ladder match in general, all their ladder matches, make it look kind of easy.
Mm-hmm.
And this made it look brutal.
Yes.
You know, because like, for example, when HBK is on the ladder and he comes crashing down with the ladder onto Scott Hall, onto Razor Ramon, sorry, breaking kayfabe there. It looked like it hurt.
Yeah.
Whereas when Jeff Hardy like flips over a ladder or like lands on a ladder or whatever he does, look, they do a great job selling. It just, they're so light and they fly so high.
Well, I think it's because they do so many high spots.
Yeah.
It minimizes the impact of the less spectacular
moves.
You
get kind of numb to it.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, HBK does a splash off the ladder and the crowd oohs and ahs,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they've probably never seen it
they
before.
They had never seen it before. And
the way they both competitors sell it, it's impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. And even to this day, like you stack this, like you said, even you stack this against like the WrestleMania 2000 ladder match. And it holds up. Like,
oh, yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's still its own thing that works really well. And, man, it just illustrates HBK was just the best seller. Like,
yeah.
He was – and it's funny because we had this question the other day about why we prefer HBK over, like, say,
Bret Hart. Yeah.
And I still – like, watching this, I'm like, yeah, HBK, he had the substance down as along with the Flash.
Yeah.
Like, he weaved it all in together. That's why he's, like, probably the best in-ring performer ever.
Yeah.
And I made the comparison between him and Dolph Ziggler because I feel like Dolph Ziggler sometimes oversells a bit too much. Like,
yes.
He looks kind of cartoonish when he does it.
Well, and Dolph, you know, we like Dolph.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if he quite has the same amount of substance as HBK.
I don't think it's even close.
No, I don't think it is.
But nobody really did. Like,
no.
It's him, Flair, and a couple others.
Yeah.
Scott Hall, an excellent opponent for HBK.
Yes.
And you brought this up during the match. You said,
if the other members of the clique, when they face off against each other, specifically if HBK is the opponent, if they feel like they have to step up their game to match his performance in the ring.
Yeah.
And if this match is, I mean, Scott Hall is a really good wrestler, really good performer, has been for years.
Yeah.
Or had been for years. But he really seemed to be right there with HBK in terms of telling the story, delivering great performance, and selling.
He did seem to step it up a notch. Yes. Yeah, he was, man, he's so fast.
I know, for a guy his size, 6'7".
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, when you said that, I was like, that's right. Because I was like, if somebody said, before you said that, if somebody, it's like, I don't know, 6'5", maybe? But yeah, 6'7". There's a difference between 6'5 and 6'7".
Yeah, 2 inches.
It's 2 inches.
Yes.
But like, even like...
It seems like if you're over 6'6", that's a whole nother area of being tall, you know? Exactly. For whatever reason, that's the cutoff. Like, if you're below 6'6", like if you're 6'5 and a half, it's like, he's a pretty tall guy.
Yeah.
But if you're over 6'6", like...
you're like looking at a skyscraper.
Wow.
I know, exactly. Man, it's crazy.
That guy is tall.
It's funny, like during this short period of time and the very limited exposure I got, like being near... Like walking by NBA players in the hallway when I was at the Kings for like a half second.
Yeah.
They're very tall. It's like freakish. It's like freakish. It's like freak show. They're massive human beings. You just don't see that every day.
And they're super
around.
Athletic. I know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's, yeah, just, it's amazing. It's ridiculous.
It's amazing.
It cracks me up. Like back when Steve Nash used to play, it's like, that dude's my size. He's my height, rather. I know. How did he do that? Should we like Isaiah Thomas now?
I know.
How does he do that?
Isaiah Thomas is what, 5'8", 5'9"?
I think so, yeah. Allen Iverson, another one. He's a short guy.
He was about 6 feet.
He was crazy. Anyways, number 10, HBK, Razor Ramon.
Great match.
Fantastic match.
Lots of fun.
And really elevated a real stinker pay-per-view. But it's like, there's so much great, crap entertainment
on it. We had it on our worst WrestleMania's list. It's because it is really emblematic of that period of wrestling where the good stuff is really good.
Yeah.
Like, really good.
Yeah.
And everything else is pretty much trash.
It's trash, but it's entertaining trash.
Yeah.
I mean, any Luger match, I can sit there and crack wise about it, you know? And then Yokozuna's there, and Bret Hart versus Yokozuna, and it's just Bret Hart trying to get out of Yokozuna's own way. It's great. Number nine. Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6.
We were talking the other day about matches put in this list and all our various WrestleMania lists, and I was recounting in my mind what WrestleManias I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, I don't think I've seen a second of WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
So I've never seen this match.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to fill me in on this one.
Okay, this is an absolutely bizarre match. And I didn't watch it when it aired live because I wasn't a wrestling fan back then.
But you just rewatched it recently, right?
I just rewatched it this morning, and I know I've seen it within the past year. I'd checked it out. And I've seen it a couple times over the years, but today I actually sat down. I was like, "Okay, I'm going to watch this shit because it's a really good match." And it takes everything except good wrestling and makes it an amazing match because these guys were horrible. I mean, okay, Hulk Hogan back in his day, like in the AWA, he was a good wrestler. He was actually
good. He was capable.
For his size,
he was a capable wrestler, yeah.
He was a capable wrestler.
I don't think anybody would ever call him a good wrestler, but he was capable.
There was no good wrestling in this match. It was just supreme storytelling, a fever pitch crowd, an unpredictable outcome, and two guys who knew their roles perfectly. And it illustrates exactly why the sequel to this at 1998 Halloween Havoc was so bad, because neither guy knew what they were supposed to be doing.
Neither of them had wrestling bills that improved with age. Wrestling abilities, sorry, that improved with age.
Exactly. They sucked even more as wrestlers.
Yes.
Neither of them, I think, liked each other.
Yeah.
And neither of them knew what role they were supposed to be filling. I don't think Warrior really understood that he was simply there for Hulk Hogan to take back his win.
Yeah, he was there to be a jobber.
Take back his loss. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't think Warrior really understood
that. Or if he did, that's not what he wanted to do.
Exactly. Conversely, on this side, you had the Ultimate Warrior, who understood perfectly that he was the hottest thing in wrestling and that this was a torch being passed to him. And vital to that was Hulk Hogan understanding, I am passing the torch on to this guy. Maybe in the back of his head, he understood that this guy is a total flash in the pan and I am going to stick around and I'm going to stab him in the back in the first moment I get. Hulk Hogan had not taken a clean pin.
He was playing the Halloween Havoc match in his head as that match was going on.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Hulk Hogan hadn't taken a clean loss, rather, since 1981.
Wow.
So he had not done that. And the great thing is, and the finish is fantastic. So the story of the match is essentially Hogan gets the upper hand early. He does his stuff. Warrior then turns the tides. Then Hulk Hogan does his comeback thing, tries to do the comeback. Warrior is able to evade a leg drop.
Oh.
Come off the ropes while Hogan is still old man writhing on the floor from the leg
hit
drop.
Hit a Warrior splash on him.
And hit a Warrior splash. 1, 2, 3, Hogan kicks out. But it's after the 3. It's right after the three. Like, this so easily could have been a two count.
Yeah.
It was like Hogan was not willing
to just take a perfectly clean, decisive loss.
Right. And there's a bunch of little things in there. Like, you could totally see the ego stuff. Like, at one point when Warrior is doing his version of the hulking out, Hogan is literally like hitting him, and Warrior acts like nothing's happening. He's just walking around like this, and Hogan is hitting him in his back, and Warrior's not even acting like anything's touching him. It's fucking hilarious. But it's also, it's like, it's 1990, which is like, I don't know. There's just this, and yeah, we're older, so we remember 1990, and there is definitely a nostalgia factor there.
Yeah,
but it
yeah.
is a fascinating time capsule for wrestling, for pro wrestling, because it's one of the only times you have the most cartoonish baby face in the world with a somehow even more cartoonish baby face in the world facing off as the Ultimate Challenge.
I know.
And everything about it is so much fun. And bizarrely, awful wrestling. Warrior went for a back body drop on, or like a back suplex on for Hogan. He hit Hogan with that and pinned him. There was like a ref bump, and it looked like Hebner had lost consciousness for a good minute,
yeah.
which is not healthy. And Warrior has Hogan pinned for a good 10 seconds off of a suplex. Off of essentially Hogan just landing on his back. So, like, that's the level of wrestling we're talking here. And you have the leg drop versus the Warrior splash. There is a couple impressive bits, though. Like, Warrior, like, basically kind of dead. Because Hogan's not really jumping into the gorilla press.
Yeah.
So Warrior has to kind of deadlift all that weight up. And he barely gets him up over his head before he just drops him.
Wow.
But still, it is an impressive feat.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
every
yeah. Hogan
muscle
back then was about 300 pounds.
He's yeah. big, dude. And he's so tanning bed dark. He is so thickly leather. It's hilarious. It's everything fun about wrestling in one match, and it's great.
Except good wrestling.
But excellent storytelling. These guys told a great story.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Number eight.
Eight.
HBK versus Kurt Angle.
So now, this, we could have easily made this entire list top 10 HBK WrestleMania matches.
Here's the thing. There's a reason. There is totally a fucking reason his name is Mr. WrestleMania.
Because he usually put on the best match at any WrestleMania he was on.
Because I'm like a huge CM Punk fan, but he yeah. never had a great WrestleMania match. He didn't. He would think about it. Taker,
good.
Jerick. Yeah, he's a really good
his
wrestler.
Match with the one of the Money in the Bank matches he won, was that excellent? You mean one on one match though?
Oh, I'm talking about one on one iconic WrestleMania moment matches. He was like a big SummerSlam guy. He kept on having a bunch of SummerSlam matches that were really good.
Yeah, he was typically. So, yeah, that's true.
Conversely, HBK. Oh my God! It was just WrestleMania after WrestleMania. I mean, he's 1, 2, 3, 4. He's four. He could have easily been like five on here.
Oh, he could have been seven.
He could have been a lot.
Because we didn't put either of his matches. Well, I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay, yeah. Let's just keep on going. But anyways, WrestleMania 21. I was lucky enough to be there. And I watched this again this morning also because I've seen this a couple times.
Oh, it's a great match.
It's fantastic. It is a fucking chess match in terms of wrestling.
It is really interesting. They had the Kurt Angle's Olympic gold medal winner in mm-hmm. wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And they start the match with HBK getting the upper hand in
yeah.
terms of mat wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a really interesting tack to take to start
you're exactly right. I was fascinated by that when I was watching this morning. I was like, oh my God, he's wrestling. Like, he's wrestling the wrestler. So that was pretty crazy. But like I said, it was a chess match. Like,
yeah.
all sorts of amazing spots. And the finish is just a sight to behold
mm-hmm.
because it is just a battle of attrition. It is just Kurt Angle wearing down Shawn Michaels.
Did you
with
time
ankle lock.
How long Angle had HBK in that ankle lock? Because it felt like an eternity.
No, but it did. And Shawn Michaels played it up so well. And Angle, there's that one spot towards the finish where Angle cannot finish off Shawn Michaels. And he grabs him by his head and he just starts yelling into his face.
Yeah.
Why won't you stay down? Why won't you stay down? And HBK, out of desperation, gets out of it and with lightning quick speed hits him with Sweet Chin Music.
Yep.
And it just lands and they both just fall down.
I know. Oh, so good.
It's so fucking good. It is so amazing. And I do. It's like one of the few memories I have from 21, which I think I had like sort of, they weren't crappy seats, but they were kind of far up there.
Yeah.
It was a Staples Center. So like once you're out of the lower bowl,
yeah.
Once you're out of like level one, you need binoculars. Basically.
Kind of. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, just a fantastic match.
Yeah. It's really good. That finish was pretty much stick with me as long as I live. I'll never forget that.
It ended with the HBK
tapping out
to
the ankle
lock.
After being in it for it felt like 3 minutes.
And they did the thing. So like they do the thing also where he attempts to kick Angle off. I've never seen this before. He, you know, Angle has him in the ankle lock, and HBK rolls over and tries to kick Angle off him, but Angle sort of absorbs the kick and keeps him and puts him back into it. He rolls with it. It was fantastic. It was little things like that. And then, of course, there were a bunch of high spots, too. HBK came off, I think, like the top turnbuckle into the table. No, no, no.
It was like moonsault, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a moonsault off the second rope.
Yeah.
Onto Angle, kind of through the table. Like, the table broke, but they sort of slid off it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was all sorts of great, great moments.
Yeah, such a good match.
Yeah. Number seven.
Seven.
Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. There's a Roman Reigns match on here, but it's for one reason alone, and that's...
That's nothing to do with Roman Reigns.
Seth Rollins. This is a WrestleMania we went to.
Yeah, and it's probably like our... the most markout moment we've ever been a part of.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's why it's on here.
But also, you know, the story they were telling was decent.
Yeah.
The performances were good. Mm-hmm. The, you know, the Lesnar started the match beating the hell out of Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm.
And bit by bit, Roman Reigns was crawling back into the match.
Because, and that's the thing that we've always said about Roman Reigns, is that we want to see the man struggle. We want to see him come back from adversity. And Brock Lesnar, and if they replicate what they started to go with here, and take it to its natural conclusion of Roman Reigns really getting his ass handed to him, but really having to work for a victory, then the match will go over. It'll be the match will be fine next year if they do go
because
through
it wasn't
with this.
A scenario where he was getting beat up, Superman punch, spear.
Right.
It was bit by bit. He'd make gains, and then Lesnar would beat him back down.
He'd just squash him down. Yeah,
Reigns
exactly.
would make more gains. And by the end of this match, Lesnar had been busted open, was bleeding.
Yeah.
And there's this, you know, both competitors were down. And I think I described this on our favorite WrestleMania's episode, just the feeling being in that stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Reigns got booed to hell when he came out.
Yeah.
And Lesnar got a face pop. But we all knew that Lesnar wasn't keeping that belt. So we're all wondering, how are they going to finish this match?
Yeah.
And then when Seth Rollins' music hits, you know, like, there we go.
Yeah. And that was like the perfect musical cue, the perfect theme music for that moment. Like you just see, like, because they had that giant screen, and you just see his name is the first thing that pops up, because you just hear like that drum beat.
Oh, the double bass drums.
Yeah, exactly. And then you see his name, and it was like, we just flipped our shit.
Yep.
I like literally the next day I could not talk because of that moment. I just started screaming. Everybody was screaming in unison because you're like, oh my God, it's like venturing into an alligator pit with your money in the bank.
I know.
Briefcase, because it's like, really? You're going to cash in now against these two monsters?
I know.
You're insane.
And they set up the finish so well where, you know, Seth gets in there and, you know, typically with Money in the Bank, cash-ins is pretty effortless.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But there was a moment where Seth was in position to eat an F5 until Reigns spears Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
Seth gets out of that situation, curb stomps Reigns, picks up the win.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Incredible.
Just amazing.
Really and well choreographed.
That WrestleMania also had Sting versus Triple H, which
an overbooked mess. That was a lot of fun.
It was so much fun. That was a lot of fun to go to.
I still kind of wish Sting had won that match.
I know, me too. Number six.
Six.
Steve Austin versus HBK, WrestleMania 14.
This match is actually pretty hard to watch.
Yeah, because if you know going into it just in how much pain Shawn Michaels was in.
Let's go back to the preceding Royal Rumble. HBK is in a casket match with The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spot where The Undertaker back body drops HBK out of the ring, and HBK's lower back hits the corner of the casket. As far as I know, that's where he hurt his back.
Yeah.
So knowing that after watching this match, because I think when I originally saw this match, I didn't know about that.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, at some point in
98. Yeah, no, I don't think I knew that either. But this was the match that got me, that opened my eyes to WWE wrestling, because we were both kind of WCW fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, actually, I started watching WWF again after the Montreal Screwjob.
Oh, okay.
So
I was so new to wrestling at the time because like I just started hanging out with you guys and you guys watch wrestling, so I meant I was watching wrestling and I was like, okay, cool, I can dig this.
Yeah. But during this match, HBK comes out. He seems like he's doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first, I don't know, 5 minutes of this match, they brawl out by the entrance ramp by where the band plays and stuff. They come back to the ring, and they do a spot where Austin whips HBK into the corner, and he does the flip that he does, and his lower back hits hard on the top turnbuckle. And it seemed like from that moment on, HBK, like his back was just giving him fits the entire time. He couldn't really bend over. As you notice, anytime he has to pick up Stone Cold's leg, he squats instead of bends over at the hips.
Yeah.
Every time he does a move or he's gearing up for a move, He always inhales real deep,
mm-hmm.
exhales, and then does it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in no point does he ever not sell fantastically.
Yeah, yeah.
He took some pretty serious bumps for a guy with a fucked up back.
And it's funny because...
And at no point did he pull any punches in terms of his selling.
If you listen to the Austin, and I mean, it's like, granted, you know, you're not going to get like a five-star match out of a guy who's got like no back.
Yeah.
But like even he, it's funny because even he's like disappointed with the match. I've heard him on the Stone Cold podcast.
Go ahead, I keep interrupting, I'm sorry.
Oh no, you just said, you know, this wasn't the match that I wanted it to be, that it should have been, but he was in so much pain.
Yeah.
That, so what were you gonna say?
And they referenced on the podcast too that they were doing for a bit the house show circuit together, and they were putting on good matches.
Yeah, yeah.
Consistently. And they were both seemed disappointed that they couldn't have that level of
performance. That, yeah, exactly.
On such a huge stage.
I know, it's sort of one of those bummer things where it's like, yeah, I wonder what that could have been like.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, and so this isn't by any means like the best WrestleMania match ever or anything, but nonetheless, like the storytelling was fantastic. And then you have the added element of Mike Tyson in there who, you know, WWE has a history, you know, this year they've got Al Roker coming in. It's like, then they had some cool people. Like Mike Tyson was like the height of cool, you know, he came in and did that shit. And it was just a true beginning to a new era.
Yes.
For Stone Cold Steve Austin, ended up becoming the biggest draw ever in the history of wrestling. And his world title reign kicked off then. And I think he only was champion for what, like...
Not very long.
Like a couple months, I think, before they had Kane take it off him. And
yeah, and then they had the Taker triple threat thing. Match at SummerSlam that year.
Yeah, and he won it, I think, five times or six times.
And then by Survivor Series, they had the tournament for mm-hmm. it. So, yeah, that belt changed hands a lot. And then The Rock and Mankind passed it back and forth several times.
Yeah, everybody got their little turn with it. There was so much great talent back then. But, and then we didn't see HBK again until 2002, 2003, something like that. I mean, he would pop up on a regular basis.
Yeah, he was guest ref for a match here and there. Uh-huh. And
he was
the
commissioner, the GM or whatever for a while, commissioner, I think. And so he would pop. When I looked it up, I was like, man, he would show up like a couple times a year, like every year until his actual comeback.
Yeah.
I think the longest he was actually gone was like 8 months or something. Mm-hmm. Like it was not that long. But in terms of being an active in-ring competitor, he was gone for 4 years.
And then we'll talk about later when he did come back.
Mm-hmm.
Just as good as ever.
Oh my God. Yeah. Let's see here. Well, yeah, we did kind of talk about it already because versus Angle.
More so. Mm-hmm. Or more in more detail.
More. Number five.
Five.
Oh, yeah. Macho Man. Randy Savage versus Ricky Steamboat, the Dragon. Oh, yeah.
I mentioned this during our best WrestleManias ever as well. This match is the highlight of WrestleMania 3. You're out of water there, huh?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And if you put this match next to most matches these days,
mm-hmm.
you might think, what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch it in its original context, it stands out so mm-hmm. much because it's so unlike anything else WWF was doing back then.
Yeah.
For the most part.
And it was unlike anything else because Macho Man and Steamboat scripted this out step by step.
And they would quiz each other.
By step. There's a fantastic, on your Twitter, you retweeted a story.
From ESPN, yeah.
The oral history of this match, and it's very extensive, but it talks about them, they memorized every step, and Steamboat didn't typically do that. Nobody did that.
Yeah, I don't think it was common, no.
It was not common.
And they made a point of saying that thing that Macho Man was comfortable calling matches on the spot,
mm-hmm.
but he thought with such, because he handpicked Steamboat mm-hmm. as not only his opponent, but the guy he wanted to drop the title to.
He had the IC title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely lost where I was going with that.
We were talking about scripting it out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Steamboat said that Macho Man's brother, said Macho Man is completely comfortable. Oh, I know where I'm going. Calling the match on the spot, but he thought it was such a fantastic opponent on such a large platform, he really wanted to put on a great show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And leave, you know, nothing to chance.
Yeah.
So they plotted out beat by beat in the Macho Man documentary that's WWE did. They have, I don't know if it's the original, the legal pad where they were writing out spots.
Yeah.
And they show it.
Yeah.
And it's literally just a number, what the spot is. Number, spot, number, spot, number, spot.
And in the oral history, they talk about how, like I said, they memorized it and they would quiz each other on, okay, well now, Ricky, listen, now I'm at number 43. What do I do? Oh, yeah. And they would go back and they'd memorize the whole thing and quiz each other. And that was something you haven't seen before. And like you said, if you take a look at this match within the context of the other matches on that card of that time, it is truly remarkable.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that this is storytelling now, not just match calling.
Yes. Well, storytelling, and it's storytelling at a pace
mm-hmm.
that is insane. They never stop. There's a match, yeah. what, 11, 12 minutes long?
Yeah.
And it never lets up. Yeah. There's so many false finishes.
Yeah.
There's so many two counts. There's so many pinfalls.
Like 19 or 20, 19, something like
yeah,
that.
19 yeah, 19 pinfalls.
Finishes, yeah.
And once someone kicks out, right back to the action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I was watching the other day Macho Man Hogan from WrestleMania 5,
mm-hmm.
and it was interesting to see how beginning of that match, it felt like Macho Man was trying to instill more of his style. Because,
mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't quite the pace that the WrestleMania 3 match was with Steamboat. But, you know, there was Hogan doing a couple more traditional wrestling moves. He wasn't just doing punches.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it was interesting to see that for the first quarter, third of the match, it was like, okay, this will be more of a Macho Man match.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was fun to see. And yeah. for that portion of the match, like, oh, this is fun.
Mm-hmm.
From there, it turns into a Hogan match. And it's mm-hmm. not as interesting.
Yeah. But, makes you wonder what like that collaboration was like,
yeah.
you know, because Hogan seemed like the kind of guy who just could easily just say, oh no, it's okay, brother. We'll just do it in the ring.
Yeah.
Hold on, Hulk. I've got
punch,
some,
punch, 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 boot, leg.
Apparently
drop.
They were really good friends back then. So who
for a
knows?
While. Yeah, they were.
Yeah. Number four, Triple H versus HBK versus Chris Benoit.
WrestleMania 20.
WrestleMania 20. This is when Chris Benoit won the World Heavyweight Championship.
From Triple H.
This was one of those things where, so you got three kind of, you know, more seasoned veterans, but still physically, I'm not going to say at their peak, but they're in there. You
yeah.
know, they're,
yeah.
they're definitely doing pretty good.
And there's, you could argue there's nothing really spectacular
right.
about this match.
Right. It's a triple threat. So triple threats are just really difficult to have.
Kind of, yeah.
Spectacular.
I mean, there's one spot where Triple H and HBK suplex Benoit through one of the announce tables.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Beyond that, no high spots of any consequence, really. It's just a really well-paced, well-told story. Everybody busting their ass. Mm-hmm. And Triple H, and especially HBK, bleed a lot.
Well, again, it's sort of the story also of three guys who know exactly what their roles are.
Yes.
And that was vital coming into this because it was supposed to be Triple H versus HBK, and then Stone Cold, for some reason, was able to, as I guess he was GM or whatever, was able to insert the Royal Rumble winner, Chris Benoit, into the match. And I don't know what the controversy was, why he wasn't in the first place. But basically, HBK and Triple H were trying so hard to make it about them, and Chris Benoit was saying, no, look, I'm your biggest problem. I'm the one who you guys need to be afraid of, and him trying to convince them of that. And there's sort of like, you know, sort of it's a triangle of characters there.
Yeah.
And each man knew who their character was and what role they were there to fulfill.
Yeah.
And so you brought the story in there. It kicks off with HBK taking on Triple H in the corner. He's like beating on him. And Chris Benoit's like, you're leaving me out of this? And he runs up. He moves HBK. He starts beating on Triple H.
And it's funny that at the end of the match, there's only one person not bleeding, and it's Chris Benoit.
And it's Chris Benoit, yeah. And it's a really, really fun, spectacular match to watch. Or you said not spectacular. It's not spectacular.
It's just really well done.
It's a really, really well done wrestling match from three guys who know, like, some three of the best storytellers, three guys who have all the intensity in the world, and they tell just a really, really well told story
yeah.
in the ring.
And after Benoit wins, he Triple H taps out to mm-hmm. the crossface.
Yeah.
And Benoit just breaks down.
Oh, immediately, yeah. And you can, I mean, it's, you know, everybody says, like, nobody saw what happened coming. They never saw it coming. But when you see the amount of passion you see in that guy, and then, you know, mix that in with a bunch of flying headbutts over 20 years mm-hmm. and painkillers, and it's like, oh, okay, well, you kind of, you know, I guess in retrospect, it's, I don't know. It's a bummer. But this was a fantastic match.
Yeah, and then Eddie comes out after the match. And
oh, yeah,
they
celebrate. That was the thing also. Is like
To close the 20th WrestleMania.
You have two WCW guys
yeah.
in there. And it's like, well, anybody who says Vince is only going to promote or you push his guys.
Yeah, his guys, yeah.
He literally has the two WCW guys who are massively over.
Yeah.
And Guerrero Engel had a really good match earlier in the night.
Yeah.
Classic Guerrero match. But yeah, lots of great moments in this match. There was another one. Oh yeah, when they right after they dumped Benoit through that table, which basically eliminated him for like 10 minutes, HBK rolls into the ring and he's just crimson.
Oh my
mask.
Gosh, he bleeds
and
so
he
much.
He starts telling Triple H to get in here, and it's like a horror movie.
I know,
it's fantastic. So there's a bunch of little moments like that,
yeah.
which just made this
and at
really
that point
special.
Triple H isn't bleeding yet.
Right, no, he's
then,
not.
And
he's
then
not,
they go yeah. to the outside, and HBK throws him to the ring post.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, Triple H starts bleeding.
It's just everybody. Yeah, well, except
yeah.
for Benoit. So, yeah, great match. Number three. Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton versus Batista at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah.
Did you watch this one recently?
No, I've only actually seen this one the one time live.
This was sort of a case of, are they really going to pull the trigger on this?
Yes.
Because this is one of the few times when, and one probably the most effective time, or the most, you know, the time where it was really evident that the WWE was forced into listening to the fans.
Yes.
The fans brought Daniel Bryan. After CM Punk left, Daniel Bryan became the focus of the fans. That he was their guy.
Yeah.
And they would not let the WWE bring in Batista, push him. He was getting booed. And so they set up this ridiculous WrestleMania where Daniel Bryan had to go in, face Triple H.
To open the show, another really good match.
A really good match. And if he won that, he would then get to go on to the main event,
yeah,
and fight for Randy Orton's World Heavyweight Championship.
Correct.
With Batista in there.
So, of course, obviously, Daniel Bryan won the first match against Triple H. After that match, Triple H lays into Daniel Bryan, mm-hmm. messes up his shoulder, and so Daniel Bryan has to go into the main event with a wrapped-up right shoulder, I believe.
Yeah. And it was a fantastic match. It was the ultimate underdog match.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's that spot, and I mentioned that in our best WrestleMania episode, too, where Batista and Orton kind of do a RKO powerbomb combo mm-hmm. through the announce table. A spot where Orton hits back first on a monitor.
Yeah.
But Daniel Bryan was outside of the ring for a good 5 minutes after mm-hmm. that spot. And yeah. we all kind of thought, okay, maybe that's how they're going to ride him out of the match.
Yeah.
And so Batista and Orton are going at it. Daniel Bryan gets back in. And eventually makes Batista tap out.
Yeah, yeah. And it
to
was
the S-lock.
It was so euphoric to see that they actually did it. And then, of course, afterwards, they bungled his title run, and then he got injured like 2 months later, I think.
Yeah, yeah. He had one defense on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, against Kane, I think. Yeah.
But for this moment. Oh, it's spectacular.
Spectacular.
Spectacular. I understand why they had Kane as his first opponent because of their history as Team Hell No.
No, I get
it's not
that.
A spectacular I get opponent, that,
but I mean, come on, have him face Batista or friggin' Randy Orton.
I know.
Like keep him in the main event scene because it just all of a sudden felt that it wasn't the main event anymore.
Oh, I know,
you know. But that moment was amazing.
Oh yeah,
number two, The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania
X18.
Now, this was weird Dream Card WCW versus WWF
yeah, it really was.
Thing because you had Undertaker versus Flair, who there was a part of me that wanted to put him on this match.
Yeah, it's a fun match.
It's a fun match.
Mostly because of the Arn Anderson interference.
And I can't justify putting him on the list because of that.
Oh, I don't know. That seems it was sufficient
pretty,
justification.
It was pretty rad. And Ric Flair bled like a stuck pig.
Well, that's pretty normal, though.
Yeah, it is. But the chills. Then you had Austin versus
Scott Hall.
The chills that were sent down everybody's spine when The Rock and Hogan first enter the ring and the crowd literally is just split or just together. I couldn't tell if they were all cheering for both men or if it was a 50-50 split. I don't know.
It was so loud you couldn't tell.
It was thunderous. And The Rock and Hogan, the looks on their faces.
They sold that moment so well.
There was no selling, though. That's the thing. Nobody could have anticipated that was the reaction two guys would get. Everybody, every single soul in that building understood and appreciated and respected they were watching history.
Yeah.
I mean, The Rock and Hogan, the two biggest crossover stars from their generations. I mean, Austin might have been a bigger draw, but The Rock was to this day, obviously,
yeah.
biggest crossover star, and even back
probably
then.
Probably in the history of wrestling.
In the history of wrestling, for sure. And Hogan, of course, was Mr. Nanny. No, what was he? Commando. Suburban Commando. And No Holds Barred.
Yeah.
Anyways.
He was Mr. Hogan. Nanny.
He was Mr. Nanny?
Yeah.
Was that what it was?
I think so.
What was the Michael Keaton one?
Mr. Mom.
Thank you. They should have done like a team, like a matchup. If it was today, it'd be a shared universe.
It would.
Yeah. Rock and Hogan. And it was a decent match. Like, Rock,
yeah.
You know, Hogan was pretty old.
Oh, yeah.
But he still put on a pretty decent match. The Rock went over. And
afterwards, the NWO came out, attacked Hogan.
Uh-huh, that's right. So Hogan, they saw the writing on the wall there. They were like, okay, man, we got to roll with Hulkamania, brother.
And then Hogan and The Rock had a rematch a few months later mm-hmm. when The Rock was in full Hollywood Rock
mm-hmm, yeah.
mode. And Hogan was the face, and it wasn't a very good match.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But this right here, I feel like the crowd, the energy of the crowd.
Oh, it elevated to
carried this
a
match.
Whole other level.
Yeah, it totally did. It was really something else. And yeah, I remember watching this. You pointed this out, Yankee Doodles watching this
yeah.
with like 20 or 50 other wrestling marks, and everybody just feeling the chills.
Yeah.
It was great. Number one.
One.
Undertaker versus Triple H, Hell in a Cell, end of an era.
WrestleMania 28. Yes. Yeah, so before we start, people are probably wondering how come you don't have any of the Shawn Michaels Undertaker matches on this list? Because yeah. they are all very good. I rewatched HBK's retirement bout.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Well, before that, very good.
Yeah.
We put this match on here, A, because it's probably both of our favorite WrestleMania matches ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it encapsulates kind of that story along with Triple H's story with Undertaker, not only this match, but the year before.
This was a four-year story.
Yes.
It really was. It was Undertaker, HBK, and Triple H kind of the last of their kind, and Undertaker dispatching his, you know, these two guys. And, you know, first it was HBK, and then Triple H stepped up in that role.
Yeah.
And HBK... was trying to warn Triple H away from this.
And Triple H is going, well, you know, you're just afraid that I can do what you never did.
Exactly.
And the year before, for the first time at WrestleMania, The Undertaker had to be helped backstage
mm-hmm,
after
yeah.
his match with Triple H,
yeah.
where Triple H walked out in his own power.
I was this close.
So it was like
I was this close.
Yeah.
yeah.
Said this, I need one more year.
Yeah.
And HBK is like, no,
it's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
But HBK was the special guest referee for this mm-hmm. match.
Yeah.
Inside Hell in a Cell.
And so that led to like a further story between HBK and Undertaker. And I think they even got 1 week just to cut a promo on each other. And
yeah.
Triple H wasn't even there.
Yeah.
And so you had this four-year story culminating in this one match. So, yeah, this entry kind of encapsulates all those matches.
Yes.
We're just not going to talk about all those because that'd take another hour. But this match, I personally think it's my favorite of all those matches. This is my favorite one. And by largely because you have an HBK story in there. And
yes.
it's a pivotal story and it's a fascinating one.
Yeah. And the story plays out in-ring beautifully.
Mm, yeah.
Beautifully.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
So we speak over and over and over and over and over about how important, at least in our mind, storytelling is to wrestling.
Yeah.
And traditionally, or historically, in Hell in a Cell matches, you expect the Hell in a Cell to be used a lot.
Right.
Hell in a Cell in this match was barely used at all.
Yeah.
A little bit in the beginning.
Yeah.
There's a couple spots
it's more
where
set dressing.
Yeah, it is.
But very effective set
very
dressing.
Very much so. The most violent aspect of this match doesn't involve the Hell in a Cell. It involves a chair.
Mm-hmm.
Where Triple H wails on Undertaker's back repeatedly and he's got these huge welts and bruises on his back that form
yeah.
pretty much instantly.
Yeah.
Because Triple H is not holding back with those chair shots.
Yeah.
He is beating the hell out of the Undertaker with
yeah.
those chair shots.
I noticed that during the Flair-Undertaker match when Flair was hitting Undertaker with chair shots. It was so ginger.
Yeah.
It was so like...
No, there's nothing gingerly about this, man.
Yeah.
And there's this... So while Triple H is beating up the Undertaker with his chair, he keeps on yelling at Shawn Michaels, end it. Call for the bell. End this match or I'm going to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to beat him to the... You know... Beat him to death, essentially,
because mm-hmm.
so I'm not losing this match.
Yeah,
and HBK will, you know, turn to the timekeeper and say, "No, I can't do that," because he'll ask the Undertaker if he gives up, and Undertaker says, "Shawn, don't stop the match. Don't mm-hmm. stop the match."
Yeah,
and so while he's friends with Triple H, he respects the Undertaker and his legacy and mm-hmm. doesn't want it to go end this way.
Well, that's the thing. There were so many things going on with HBK because does he want somebody finally to beat The Undertaker and it gets to be his friend? Or does he want Triple H to be on the same level as him and not be able to be The Undertaker?
And
he acts it perfectly. Like, he performs those emotions perfectly.
And that's not even taking into account his own relationship with The Undertaker.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's so many little things going on here. So at one point, The Undertaker is, like, beaten to hell, and he puts Shawn Michaels in Hell's Gate.
Mm-hmm.
Triple H hits Undertaker. Shawn gets out. And then pretty much as soon as Shawn comes to and gets back up, super kicks the Undertaker.
Yeah, yeah.
Super kicks him. Triple H goes for the pin. Undertaker kicks out. And Shawn Michaels jumps back into the corner, sits in the turnbuckle, and is just, oh, my God.
Yeah.
why won't the Undertaker stay down?
Yeah.
And every time the Undertaker kicks out, that's Shawn Michaels' reaction. It's just, oh my gosh, how is he still wrestling?
Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like at that point, he becomes us.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
yeah.
we're just there thinking, how this streak means this much to the Undertaker, mm-hmm. that he's yeah. willing to accept this much punishment and is willing to kick out from anything
and
in order to save this streak.
Extend that moment that you're talking about past that match. There's no reason for Undertaker to have ever come back, because
no.
that should be the lasting image that we get, is Shawn Michaels as us thinking this guy can never be beat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had Brock Lesnar beat him, and then he beats Bray Wyatt, and then he beats CM Punk, and then who knows, Roman Reigns is probably going to beat him, and he's wincing in pain.
I know.
And it's like, no, we did, this should have ended then.
I know. He still moves so well during mm-hmm. the match.
Yeah.
Moved really well.
Yeah.
Did old school. Did all his moves.
Right.
Match finish with Tombstone.
Mm-hmm.
Triple H.
Yeah.
Shawn called the pin or counted the pin. No funny business.
Yeah. They all help each other up to the top of the ramp, and they all do a bow.
There's no bow.
There's no bow?
There's no bow. They just stand
oh,
there.
Oh, they do. Somebody does this, though. Doesn't Undertaker do this?
I don't think so. They just stand there.
Do they just stand there?
And soak it in, yeah.
I thought they did like a curtsy.
No.
No? People start throwing flowers at them?
Because what happens is Triple H is on the mat after the pin. Shawn Michaels, you know, he's more or less fine.
Mm-hmm.
Undertaker kind of gets himself up. You know, does his pose.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes over to, both he and Shawn go to Triple H to check on him, essentially, and then help him up.
Yeah.
And they all walk up the ramp together, yeah. like Triple H is being held up by Undertaker.
They turn
Shawn.
Around, though. And
yeah, they walk up and turn
look
around.
Look at the crowd.
Yeah, just look at the crowd, but there's no okay. bow or.
Yeah, they curtsied.
If you want to think that, that's cool.
They go.
I know.
They do something.
No, they do what Triple H used to do when he was the American Blue Blood.
Exactly.
A curtsy. That's what it was.
Exactly. No, I think Undertaker should start doing the Xbox crotch chop.
Doing that.
They inexplicably throw up four horsemen.
Triple threat. That's what it is. Triple threat.
They start doing the Hogan pose.
I know.
Oh, man.
So I guess in that sense, end of an era makes sense because it's the end of that storyline.
Yeah. But it should have been his last match.
It should have been. That was kind of what I looked into it some too, because I was curious if that was Triple H's last match as a full-time performer.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. He, more or less, the year prior, wasn't wrestling full-time. He started already taking on camera the business
okay.
role.
Okay, all right.
So, he still wrestled some, but not
yeah.
full-time.
Yeah.
And the year prior was Undertaker's last Mania, I believe, as a full-time competitor too.
Did Triple H, was it more of a fade-out for him? Like, did he start doing, like, 4 a year?
Oh, I didn't go into that much like detail. I remember after his yeah. match with his first match against Lesnar, he had that promo in the ring where he made it seem like he was retiring.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Yeah.
When wow. he lost.
Yeah. Anyways, those are our personal favorite WrestleMania moments. Hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to hit the subscribe button, share it with your friends or whatever you do, and let us know in the comments what your favorite WrestleMania matches are. And until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.